is the Banner Baseball Show. Paul Mancano and John Mioli here at the Banner offices along the Inner Harbor. John, thank you so much for making your debut here on the Banner Baseball Show, this brand new venture that we're doing.
I've made it. It's great to be here. I feel like it was just a year ago. I was getting my headshot taken against this orange this orange deal. I was smiling. I was looking off to the side wistfully.
I've seen those pictures.
Wistfully at what was to come, and it all lived up to it.
Yeah, and still much more to come here at the Baltimore Banner, where you can subscribe, by the way, $1 for 6 months to read all of John's great work, to read Danielle Allentuck and Andy Koska and Kyle Goon, all that good stuff. John, you were down in spring training. We're going to touch on later on in the show some roster predictions, as we are, what, a week and 2 days away from opening day at Oriole Park at Camden Yards?
Gosh, it felt like it was spring. It was like baseball weather this weekend.
Yeah.
No longer does, but
no.
Maybe we got time.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully it won't snow or anything like that next week at Camden Yards. But the bulk of our conversation today is going to be about the Orioles outfield competition, because it has been the talk of spring training. We obviously know that guys like Anthony Santander and Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes, those are going to be your three outfielders to start the season in 2024. But you look down the road just a little bit, and you look at 2025, when Anthony Santander will be a free agent next offseason. You look to 2026, when Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes will be free agents. You've got a lot of question marks as to what the future of this outfield could look like. And the Orioles have plenty of internal options who we've seen shining in spring training. Colton Cowser having an unbelievable spring. Heston Kjerstad starting to turn things around. Kyle Stowers having a ridiculous spring. But you wrote about on the BaltimoreBanner.com about how the decision for the Orioles is easy long term. Eventually the torch is going to be passed from guys like Mullins and Hayes to guys like Cowser and Kjerstad. The question is, when is that torch going to be passed?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, because we got to experience what the Orioles like to do with their roster and turning over players and getting that value. Mike Elias even mentioned it after he made the Corbin Burns trade, that the Brewers are a good team that wants to contend, and they decided that for the purposes of their organizational health and their roster, that having two prospects and a draft pick was worth more to them than 1 year of Corbin Burns. So
right.
Looking through that lens, I think that the Orioles are going to progressively move on from some of these, you know, veteran outfielders. That's not to say that they're not good players. They're very good players. These are two guys who have been all-stars, and Anthony Santander, you know, when he's at his best, you know, he has those 2 week heaters where he hits like seven home runs at a time, and the Orioles win most of those games.
Yeah.
Like, you pay 11 some million dollars for that kind of production in the middle of your lineup 10 times out of 10 every day, twice on Sunday. The question will be, and I think the Orioles experienced this a little bit last year, is like, when is having all this depth and all this talent in the minors become diminishing returns? Are these guys going to be worth more at the end of this year than they are now? And when they become worth more to the Orioles than the players who they'd be replacing, they are going to take over those spots. It's a really unique spot to be in. You know, the Orioles, you know, I think had a lot of conversations this winter about, you know, we have good players. Like,
right.
At what point is the dream of a potentially very good player, When does that begin to outweigh that? And
right.
I don't know that there's going to be any kind of inflection point. The players that we're talking about outside Ryan McKenna all have options. They can just go to AAA and be options for later down the line. But this is probably a dream camp in terms of performance, because you want these players to all be at their best, and I think they are.
Yeah, they are all playing very well right now in spring training. You already have guys that up at the big league level, like you said, two of those guys are all-stars. Mullins and Hayes have been all-stars. And guys that can play, those are two guys that can play center, they can play left. They're still not going to be 30 for a year or two. I think Mullins this is his age 29 season. And I think Hayes is going to be his age 28 or 29 season as well. And they're just making each about $6.3 million in arbitration, which does not sound like a whole lot of money. But in your article, you wrote about how it has been the Orioles' MO under Mike Elias that once the players become pretty expensive, the Orioles turn the page to the younger guys. The only thing is, one, we're getting new ownership and David Rubenstein as the leader of this new ownership group. And two, we haven't yet seen too many off seasons of Mike Elias with a winning ball club. You know, a lot of those guys that became too expensive, like Jonathan Villar, he moved on from because the team was also not winning games,
yeah.
You know, and Jonathan Villar would not have moved the needle. So you're going to try to get a young guy in return for Jonathan Villar. You're going to try to get a young guy, you know, a package for Dylan Bundy. So these are guys that are helping the team right now, a very good team, 101 win team. But at what point do they say, you know what, maybe we should try to get something for them? And I think the person that you look for is not Hayes and it's not Mullins. It's Santander entering the last year of his deal, making $11.7 million, you know, going to hit free agency. But like you said, he brings a kind of power, switch hitting power that nobody else in this lineup can provide outside of maybe Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, and if we game it out, if we're talking about this in, like, you know, it being July, like how many of the people who could theoretically replace Anthony Santander in this lineup need to have more home runs than him for it to feel even remotely okay?
Like, right.
Does he have to have fewer home runs than Ryan Mountcastle, Ryan O'Hearn, Heston Kerstad, you know, Adley Wright? Like,
right.
You pay for that because to have a switch hitter in the middle of your lineup that you just write there in pen every day, who plays a decent outfield, like that is valuable. And the Orioles, I don't think, have let someone ride into the free agent sunset. I'm trying off the top of my head to think if there's been anyone of that caliber. And like, there will be value. There's going to be a team that would love to have an Anthony Santander in July. I think one of those teams will probably be the Orioles. And it's going to be really, really fascinating to see how they view that. Because I think, you know, if we mention what Michael Eye said about the Brewers making those trades, like he also said in that same answer to a question that our colleague Kyle Goon asked, that like they have always weighted what they do towards increasing their playoff odds and trying to max. I'm not going to say.
Don't say.
Don't say.
It's your old newsletter.
Yeah. And trying to have the best chance of succeeding in the playoffs every single year. That used to be 3 years out. Now it's this year. So where is it worth it to let that asset walk? And you know, he's also a person, he's not an asset. He's a player, he's a person who's been in Baltimore for a long time and has been a really good player. And they're going to have to make that decision. I think that having the options that they do and the options who are trained in the way they want to be trained and play the way they want to play is going to be a tick in those players' favors. But if the Orioles are anywhere near where anyone thinks they're going to be in terms of performance and their win totals and where they are in the race, it's going to be really hard to make that trade. And we're past the phase of like, we know what they do when they're rebuilding. We have some now more with the Corbin Burnes trade examples of how this team wants to operate as winners. We're going to get even more once ownership changes hands and there's a little bit of a change in potentially philosophy, but like this is going to be one of the more fascinating data points that we're going to get.
Yeah. Because you know, Corbin Burnes is going to be a free agent after this year, but the Orioles, if everything goes well this year, are going to extend him that qualifying offer. And if he turns it down and signs with another team, the Orioles are going to get some kind of draft compensation. Anthony Santander is probably not going to get the qualifying offer from the Orioles because it's going to be about $20 million for one season. And that's probably going to be a little bit too much money for what they're, you know, the fact that a guy that they probably at this point are going to want to move on from, or at least bring back to on a much lower number than $20 million. So they'd be letting him go for nothing if he rides the year out. But like you said, I can't think of an example of somebody that they did that with other than those guys that they signed 1 year contracts to, like Jordan Lyles, you know, and then declining his option for the following season, or Jose Iglesias and then trading him. They just haven't had too many examples of this. So it's going to be an interesting test case. But when you look at the Orioles outfield of the future too, we're starting to see these players shine in camp. Colton Cowser is looking like he has an inside track at a spot on that opening day roster. He has the center field flexibility, been mashing in camp. Heston Kerstad turned things on later. He finished the season on the big league roster last year, has that pop from the left side of the plate. Kyle Stowers is reminding everybody why fans were clamoring for him at the end of the 2022 season.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the same cachet. He doesn't have the same, you know, draft pick level as the other guys. You know, Cowser, number 5 overall pick. Kerstad, number 2 overall pick. Stowers was a later round pick in 2019. He's a little bit older. He's 26 this year. But he just hit 3 home runs in a spring training game. He's got an OPS over 1.1, over 1,000 in spring training. The question is, can you carry a guy like that on your 40-man roster through the entire 2024 season, or maybe the entire 2025 season, when you wait for him to get an opportunity because he's being, you know, leapfrogged by guys like Cowser and Kerstad right now?
Yeah, you know, I know teams were seeing, you know, what appeared to be a distressed asset that they could get a lot for,
right?
Last year at the deadline. people around the game, nobody really gave up on Kyle Stowers. I think there's a pretty good understanding of what he is. And I take it as like a thought exercise. I was actually thinking about this before I came over here to talk about this with you. Like, if Kyle Stowers had not gotten hit in the face with that pitch,
yeah,
if he had been healthy and hitting the way he was in Norfolk last year, which was really good. Like, yeah, he was, you know, you're seeing a lot of AAA Statcast data and coming out recently, and MLB's done a great job of putting that out. You know, we're talking about somebody who hits the ball as hard as anyone at the AAA level, who's barreling the ball up as well as anyone. If he was healthy, you know, maybe that's his
role spot, yeah,
instead of Heston Kerstad coming up at the time he did. And maybe he, you know, holds his own and shows like everybody that the player who was here at the beginning of the season isn't right, the one he is. And then we're talking, there's not as much of a, you know, what are we going to do with this guy this spring? It's a guy who was on the roster at the end of the season, coming and having a good camp and being on the team. I hesitate to say that they will not, you know, keep these guys, because as like, you know, cover your ears if you're a player, like, they are not going to have their hand forced by the idea of having too many guys, you right, know? Imagine if they had decided, you know, we have Cedric Mullins and we don't need a Colton Cowser. We don't need that top center fielder in our system.
Right.
And, you know, what Cedric Mullins had happened in spring training with his little hamstring tweak was serious. Then yes, you feel very, very silly because you have in-house options that you have moved on from and you're not there. I think they really very much value the talent they've built. They're not going to move on from it quickly, but there does come a time for the players and for the, you know, for the organization that, if it's not going to happen, let's acknowledge that.
Right.
And I'm not sure they're there. I'm not sure what that looks like for some of these top guys. We've seen it for some second level pieces and probably like above that with the Corbin Burns trade. But you really want to make sure you're not giving away too much and giving up on a player who can help you. And I think they view a lot of these players as players who can.
Right. The question is when, you know, and it similar to Kyle Stowers could have been the guy at the end of last season. When Cedric Mullins went down with his injury in May and they brought in Aaron Hicks, who can play center, and Stowers hasn't really played center in the minor leagues. You know, Stowers was hurt at that point. So maybe he would have gotten more of an opportunity had he been healthy, and maybe the Orioles don't bring in Aaron Hicks at that point, and we see Stowers go on a run in the big leagues. But at this point now, you know, Cowser is certainly looking like a piece going forward, and at least what the Orioles have invested in him and what the Orioles have invested in Heston Kerstad as those top guys. I also think of guys like Connor Norby, who I put in more of a camp of like Joey Ortiz, where there really wasn't a spot for Joey Ortiz anywhere on this big league team in 2024, even though Michael Elias said we expect him to get a lot more playing time. He just didn't say with Milwaukee.
Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, turned to the camera and winked. But the, you know, Ortiz didn't have a spot anywhere in this team. Norby doesn't really have a spot anywhere in this team. Jackson Holliday is looking like your opening day second baseman. Connor Norby can play a little bit of the outfield, and maybe the Orioles try to give him a little bit more run there. But he's only 23 years old, already has great AAA numbers, former second round pick in 2021 after Colton Cowser, I believe. So that's another guy that they have a fair amount invested in. They seem to love him as a player, a top 100 player by some metrics. And another guy that, you know, where does he fall between? Sure, he's after Cowser and Kerstad. Is he above Stowers? Is he, you know, behind Stowers? Where does he fall in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably no better player that exemplifies kind of the changing perspectives and standards of this farm system and evaluating talent in this organization. I was down there last Father's Day weekend, so it's like the middle of June.
Mm-hmm.
He was like grinding out like an OPS that started with an 8, and I did a quick interview with him, and all he was talking about was how bad everything's going. And like he's it's his first season in AAA. He's grinding out an 800 OPS. Not really healthy the whole season, like not at his best, like fully
right,
healthy, really at all. And he ends up having, you know, a very good season, and in some estimations falls in where he's ranked like prospect wise.
Right.
And like, that's just, you know, charge that one to the game when you have this many, you know, prospects coming into the organization, this much talent, this much guys,
right,
this many guys not graduating. But we're talking about a player who is the kind of like natural hitter that the Orioles like.
Yeah.
They also like athleticism and defensive versatility, and seems like left-handed hitters a bit more than right, but you can't just run out, you know, 9 lefties, because then, you know, some
yeah,
for a left field come in and ruin your day at Camden Yards. But you need to have some of the things that he brings, and it's going to be interesting to find out, you know, how long. You know, we saw Jordan Westberg spend a lot more time in AAA last year than anyone thought. We saw Kyle Stowers spend a lot more time in AAA than anyone thought. The reality is that if this was 4 years ago, he would have just gotten to play second base for like 3 months at some point, because what else is going on?
Yeah. You know? See Jermai Jones.
Yeah. Like, let's just let it rip and see what happens. There's going to need to be an opportunity, and he's going to need to be the best candidate for that job. So I think he's probably going to be looking pretty closely at what happens with the bench infielders, with Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo, as this camp progresses and the Orioles figure out how many, you know, infielders they want on their roster. And then I think he'll have a good idea of where he'll stand. But at the end of the day, it's about production. If he's healthy and he's producing well, hitting at the top of that AAA lineup, there will be no choice but to give him a look. And I'm fascinated to see how that look comes about.
Exactly. And there are a couple other guys for that outfield that they could be looking at for 2025, 2026, maybe. Dylan Beavers, who finished the year last year with Double A, former number 33 overall pick in 2022, left-handed hitter. And Enrique Bradfield Jr., their first round pick last summer, 22 years old, ridiculous speed, great outfield chops in center field, but they're just hoping his bat is going to progress as well. He finished the year with 5 games in High A Aberdeen. Two guys that give them some insurance policies, I think you could say. And when you look at this outfield, let's look way down the line to 2026. Let's assume that the Orioles aren't going to bring back Anthony Santander, and that they're going to move on from Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins. That's 3 outfield spots.
Pour one out.
way down the line. And think a lot of things can change that. But, you know, Heston Kerstad, Colton Cowser maybe have those spots. Do you think maybe Enrique Bradfield Jr. is their center fielder of the future, or Dylan Beavers takes one of those spots?
I think both of those guys are going to be clearly in that mix. It's going to be really fascinating with Bradfield to see what the, you know, development markers that say, okay, he's ready for X level, Y level, because, you know, it's a different skill set in terms of his offensive profile.
Yeah. Different from a lot of the guys that they've drafted.
Absolutely. I mean, it might not be something that we can see, you know, oh, he's hitting X and his OPS is X and he's played X amount of games. It might be like, legitimately, like, how hard is the contact? Like, is he hitting the ball at the right angles? Like, does he hit this check mark? But he can move quickly and be a candidate, you know, to be on the bench in September if the Orioles need that.
Crazy to think about. Yeah, I mean, but as a speed demon,
absolutely. I mean, this team is going to have a ton of options and a ton of talent to fit onto a playoff roster. But it would be, you know, I know this time last year they were thinking about what if Coby Mayo pops and like, how can we get him on the roster if we need it? They didn't ultimately need to because, you know, Ryan O'Hearn became a thing. You know, Heston Kerstad was back to what they wanted him to be. Coby Mayo just didn't really have a chance, but he also broke out. He had one of the best seasons in all the minors.
Yeah.
So I think those are conversations you're probably having. And Dylan Beavers, you know, somebody I think that, you know, it's a pretty favorable hitting environment there in Bowie. I think he found some things with his swing, or just straight up stopped thinking about his swing so much as the season went on last year.
He's gone on so many changes in his swing.
I know. I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. Swing school. Back in session. Yeah. But I think he's going to have a really, you know, he's going to hit the ground running and be in that mix. I also don't think you can discount even Judd Fabian, you know, somebody who can be a true defender in center field, who can hit for some power, might have a little more swing and miss than you'd like. But I think there's going to be a lot of talent alignments, but I think you plan on a Cowser being prominent in that. And I think there's a spot for one of Stowers and Kerstad as part of that. And then you get Bradfield's defense, you get Beavers' speed and versatility. You can do a lot of good things with this outfield going forward.
And you mentioned also about in that article about the change in ownership and whether that would change the organizational philosophy, especially when it comes to extending players. And Danielle Allentuck wrote about, she talked to Austin Hayes and he talked glowingly about the organization and indicated he'd be open to receiving an extension offer. But would ownership really change Michael Elias's mindset and change his philosophy of maximizing these guys' window, and as soon as they become expensive, turning the page over to the young guys?
It's really an interesting kind of dynamic. It's going to be probably the defining factor of what happens with this ownership change and this front office change. You know, if like, you know, if Michael Elias like ends up doing like a Theo Epstein and like leaving in a gorilla suit, like we might know why. It might be because there's some kind of philosophical differences.
Right.
But David Rubenstein has bought a team with a front office that has been very, very adherent to a model that,
yes,
that projects future value and assigns, you know, dollar figures to what they value and what they don't value and tries to make the best decisions possible based on that. I don't know if this is a situation where, like, you know, you're doing like a make a GM or make create a franchise in Madden where you can like adjust the sliders and go from like the left side to the right side with
budget.
Budget. Like, yeah, let's decrease the difficulty a little bit.
Right.
I'm not sure if you just have to hit a few keystrokes and say, okay, now we think this could be worth like, you know, X times two because we have that much money now and we don't have to worry about it. I'm not sure how that will play out, but I think that it's going to be based on what these players can offer going forward. The soon to be old ownership was very scarred by the impact that signing long-term contracts to players who were on the decline had on everything. It lives in the hallway. They couldn't stop thinking about it even long after it was gone.
Their excuse for absolutely everything.
Hired a front office that was very happy to not do that. Again, and now they're going to have the means to do that, whether it's keeping some of those guys who have been here for the long haul in, whether it's making sure that there are some of these younger pieces here long term. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how they allocate those resources, because I'm not expecting there to be a blank check. I expect there to be some newfound revenue streams within the organization that might have been untapped before or weren't, you know, realized to their full potential. But I'm not thinking this is going to be like a blank check. I do think there's going to be an opportunity to do that where there might not have been before. And it's just a matter of whether that fits into the Orioles framework.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see. And we can't really know the answer for a while. We won't even be able to really talk to David Rubenstein until this sale gets finalized. So a lot of questions for his introductory press conference, I'm sure, whenever this deal becomes finalized. Let's turn it from the long term to the short term and just look at what's going to happen over this final week as roster cuts occur, as the Orioles get down to their opening day roster. Colton Cowser, I mentioned, having the opening day, you know, spot for on the opening day roster. Do you agree? Do you think he's probably got the edge over Kerstad and the field there?
I think so. I think you can kind of slot him into one of those extra outfield spots.
No Stowers.
Yes. I think that there's an if we're operating in a world where like two of those three guys can make it, I would probably say Stowers over Kerstad, because there's more defensive value there, and Kerstad still doesn't have a lot of AAA time.
Sure.
And they can always fall back on that. So I would probably say those two, but I'm not sure if there's going to be room for two.
Yeah, it's a question of, you know, Jorge Mateo also having that center field versatility now. And look, Michael Elias loves to make his last minute trades. We saw Danny Coulomb come into the organization very last minute and then be a huge bright spot for this team. So maybe there's a trade to be made over the next coming days. You kind of breathed heavily when I mentioned Jorge Mateo in center field. Are you not sold on the idea of him playing a good center field?
If he's, you know, to be a super utility player, I think there needs to be like an offensive profile to that. And
and right now, well, look, in April, he's got an offensive profile.
Give me that guy.
Yeah.
You play, you know, you could put him in the lineup nine times.
Like, exactly.
Forget moving around position. You play all the positions if you're going to hit like that.
Yeah.
The reality is that like towards after that, it was not the same. And I think as his playing time waned, he was not the same defender.
Yeah.
And the idea of him having to move around positions and maybe and play sporadically seems like it could not be as good of an outcome as the Orioles would want.
It's always interesting. Yeah, because at this point, well, at last summer, I remember having these conversations about should Joey Ortiz supplant Jorge Mateo, and they stuck with Jorge Mateo. He was on the postseason roster, had some nice performances in the postseason, but he's got to show that over the course of the season. And like you said, that speed aspect, I think, gives him an advantage over a lot of guys, but maybe we get to September and the Orioles are saying, hey, Enrique Bradfield Jr. is hitting pretty well in Double A.
Can also do this.
Yes, exactly. And the rosters are expanded. All right. Other than the lineup, let's look to the bullpen, because we have our rotation pretty much set, at least until Means and Bradish come back. Your eight bullpen guys, I think there are some definite locks. Craig Kimbrell, obviously. Yennier Cano, Danny Coulomb, Cionel Perez, Dylan Tate. I think Mike Bauman's probably close to a lock at this point.
Seems like he's had a good spring too.
Yeah. He's out of options as well. Jacob Webb hasn't pitched particularly well, but maybe they go with a veteran there. And then Keegan Aiken is a lefty option, has 6 1/3 scoreless innings so far this spring. So would those be your eight guys, or is there Julio Teheran sneak his way in as a long reliever, maybe?
I'm not sure. You know, I know there's, I haven't, you know, broken down. I'm also very bad at the doing the thing where you're like, okay, they need this starter for this days. And like, so I haven't done that. I've kind of relieved myself of that.
Yeah.
That, I mean, life.
You're not on the everyday beat anymore. Yeah, you know, you don't do that.
Pick and choose. But I'm not sure the value of a long guy. I think, you know, if they like Teheran enough to keep him around and he's got a contract out and they want to keep him in the organization, then you can do that and do some maneuvering with, you know, I'm sure everybody's shoulder hurts at this point if you need to get 2 weeks, 2 weeks of somebody, you know, to get somebody else you want on the roster. But I think it'll probably be more short relief. I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of guys who have been sent out of camp already too, out of the bullpen. And I think there's going to be a lot of value in the depth that they've built in relief this offseason. You know, there's a wave of homegrown or you know, Orioles developed pitchers that are coming up. But I think that last year they kind of ran into trouble because if somebody like Mike Baumann just needed a break, like,
yeah,
they didn't really have optionable pieces or ways to get him that break and bring somebody else up who can do that job.
Right.
And I think that this is going to be a year between, you know, some of the guys they brought in off the street and some of the guys who have come in through their own system. There's going to be a lot better opportunities for them to do that, and I think the whole bullpen will be better for it.
Absolutely. Well, we have very little time in which to make these decisions, and fortunately we're not the ones that have to make these decisions. It's Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde.
Yeah, phone hasn't rung yet.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be calling on us, I'm sure, at some point. John will offer his insight. At John Mioli, you can read his great work on the BaltimoreBanner.com. $1 for 6 months. At John Mioli, right?
That's it.
The Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano, also at All Banner Sports. And John and Danielle and Andy and Kyle have all great stuff for you as we are closing in on opening day. We'll have plenty more content from now until then, so be sure to tune in to the Banner Baseball Show. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Please like, review, rate, subscribe if you're watching. You can also listen to us on any of your favorite podcast platforms now. So we are in audio format as well as visual format, so you don't have to look at our faces if you don't want to. I understand.
That sounds great for everybody.
Exactly. That is a win-win. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.